From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. As we all adapt to the new reality in the wake of the novel coronavirus, families across California are figuring out new daily routines. This hour on Forum, questions and answers about school closures, childcare, and how to find ways to make sure your children continue learning outside of a classroom. We'll hear what schools are doing to help students stay healthy, safe, and on track academically. And we want to hear from you, of course. What is your family's plan to navigate school closures? We'll get started with Forum right after this news. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Well, as of this morning, more than half of all school districts in California are closed as part of an effort to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus, Governor Newsom said yesterday. That represents more than 80% of all school children in the state who are not in class today. Of course, that's presenting lots of challenges for parents with school-age kids, from childcare options to trying to find other ways to have children continue learning even as schools are closed. And so this hour, we have lots of answers to your questions and resources as well. Joining us, Marisa Lagos, KQED's politics correspondent and co-host with me of Political Breakdown. Hey, Marisa.
Hey, Scott.
Also joining us, Julia McAvoy. She is KQED Senior Editor for Education and Equity. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
And also with us, Jenny Radesky. She's a development pediatrician at the University of Michigan C.S. Mott Children's Hospital. Good morning to you as well.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Well, let me begin with Governor Newsom. He had a lengthy press briefing yesterday afternoon from the Office of Emergency Services in Sacramento. Let's hear a little bit of what he had to say.
We are looking at this from a very holistic perspective and holistic lens. We recognize that social isolation for millions of Californians is anxiety inducing, but we recognize what all of the science bears out and what we recognize around the rest of the world, that we need to meet this moment head on.
Lots of recommendations and advice and orders from the governor yesterday. And Marisa Lagos, as you listened to the governor yesterday, you and I were texting each other, I think, during part of that. You know, what jumps out at you as you listen to him, both in terms of how he's handling this crisis and the way he's thinking about it as a former mayor, for example?
Yeah, I mean, as someone who's watched Newsom for like 15 years, I really do think that you can see how just he has a personality that tends to shine in moments of crisis. I think, you know, some of the critiques of his administration before this has been that they try to do too much. And I think he has done a very good job of paring down and focusing on this. I think what we're hearing from him is a pretty aggressive approach to what he's asking people to do, but not yet ordering. So when we talk about the bars, when we talk about the social distancing, most of this has been recommendations, not requirements. You know, some local areas like Los Angeles, the entire county, have taken a slightly different approach. But I do think that Newsom is trying to work with the private sector as much as possible to sort of encourage these types of reactions. And I think that he has been trying to be very communicative. And I think it's, you know, worth noting that it's a really stark difference from what we have seen out of Washington, D.C.
Julia McAvoy, obviously, this is a big change of routine for families and kids and so many other people. What are you hearing from parents, from school superintendents and other school officials that you've been talking with?
Yeah, Scott, you know, this is a time of a lot of confusion, quite frankly. There are districts who are waiting until Tuesday to hear more from the governor about what is expected of them, because some of them have moved aggressively toward being able to transition to online learning, such as West Contra Costa County, for example. They've got detailed lesson plans up by grade level on their websites. They've got resources for students and teachers and parents on their website. And, you know, last Friday they were talking about teachers were going to do a 50-minute lesson plan, and they were going to give assignments, and then they were going to collect those assignments at the end of the day, and then that's how they would take attendance, right? And then late Friday, they changed their minds. And over the weekend, the ACLU put out a statement that said, you know, if you're going to be doing this online, you better make sure it's equitable. Well, in West Contra Costa County, the kids each have Chromebooks, and there are Wi-Fi hotspots that are free for families. And so, again, they felt really prepared for this. But the truth is, there are kids at home who might have a Chromebook, who might have a Wi-Fi hotspot, but there's not an opportunity to learn in their household. So a young girl that I know said, I don't want to be doing class from home, especially not some sort of live Google Hangout, you know, lesson. And I said, well, why not? She said, well, it's too noisy in my house. And, you know, she's got four siblings. She's got her parents. Everybody's at home in a one bedroom apartment. There's another kid that our education reporter, Vanessa Roncagno, spoke with, who was a high school student who said, like, I don't know how I'm going to concentrate on learning when I got to be home with my younger siblings and I'm going to have to be babysitting them. And I think this is the conundrum around equity right now. And I think that the governor was really torn in his decision about, you know, moving aggressively to get schools to close. I think you could hear it in his press conference. And I think he's trying to weigh out the reality of, look, if we close all these schools, you're going to have frontline healthcare workers who would need to stay home and possibly watch the children, right?
Exactly.
And we need those workers on the front lines. And also, low income families are going to have a hard time doing work, paying their rent, and then also watching their kids. And so that's sort of what's at stake here for some people.
Yeah, and Julia, of course, you mentioned that lack of universal access to online learning, and that's a good time for me to mention that KQED today begins broadcasting a California State Standards Aligned Educational Television Schedule, and folks can find that on KQED Plus. And programming was developed to help schools and districts bridge that digital divide. You can go to kqed.org/TV to watch it online, or, of course, just turn on the television if you have access to that as well. Jenny Rudesky, as you're listening, especially to what Julia McAvoy was just describing in terms of some of the challenges that both schools and parents and families are facing, what are your thoughts as someone who works with kids and families? Everyone's interested in having these kids continue to learn as we go through this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have lots of thoughts, and I think my first thing I wanted to say is, as a healthcare provider who, you know, I work for the Michigan Medicine system that's affiliated with University of Michigan, we have been really, really just incredibly grateful. And everyone I've talked to that has been that I was in training with or that I've been in med school with, we've been communicating with each other, feeling a great sense of relief that communities are willing to take some of these steps for social distancing, such as closing schools or in Michigan, we've had schools closed as of today. Our restaurants and bars are closing as of 3 p.m. and are only going to be available for takeout. And on my call this morning with the Department of Pediatrics at our hospital, there was this great sense of relief that we can handle this pandemic much, much more effectively if we're able to slow the spread of the disease. And I think that I really just wanted to first say, you know, how important all of these social distancing measures truly are. But we can't ask parents to do it. I mean, this sounds like an impossible task to ask parents. You already have so many parents stretched in so many different directions in the United States with lots of different inequities in terms of access to, you know, financial resources or childcare resources. And now we're asking them all to take care of their kids at home, to figure out childcare approaches, to distance themselves from the loved ones that help them cope, and also to oversee their education. And I am a developmental behavioral pediatrician, so I work with lots of kids with autism, lots of kids with ADHD, learning disabilities, disruptive behavior disorders, anxiety. And so this transition for them, we've been thinking about them for the past week of how are kids going to handle this sudden change in routine. So many kids thrive on the structure of their school day, the predictability of having that teacher there who cares about them and knows exactly what they need to learn. And so I have been really impressed so far with the schools that I've been in contact with of how they've just, you know, scrambled and tried to be creative of trying to keep kids engaged. All of these logistics issues that you've all been talking about are so hard to tackle, and they're just going to have to be sorted out, I think, over the next couple of weeks. But I would say the medical system is just grateful that some of these steps are starting to be taken.
We're talking this hour, of course, about the impact of school closures across California. And we'd love to know what your family's plan is to navigate these things. What are your biggest concerns? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or if you prefer, you can email your questions to forum@kqed.org. Julie McAvoy, Governor Newsom yesterday in his remarks was noting that 24 of the 25 largest school districts in California, the one exception being Kern County High School, have closed. And he was also talking about the disparities in the social safety net between, say, urban and suburban school districts and rural school districts. What can you say about that in terms of, you know, why the state might be giving a little bit more leeway to some of these school districts in less dense, more rural locations?
Well, I mean, I don't know much about what the situations are in Kern County, quite frankly, but I know that his point was that it's more important. We have other ways to step in this urban area. Let me give you an example. San Francisco Unified is saying they're going to figure out childcare for frontline healthcare workers and low-income parents who must continue to work. So they're going to work with their park district. They're going to work with their libraries to somehow meet what the governor is asking of them, which was basically he's saying arrange supervision for students during school hours, which feels like a mixed message as well, right? We're going to close schools so we don't socialize, but then we're going to arrange for childcare for some people's kids because they have to continue to work. So some districts like San Francisco, like West Contra Costa County, have an ability to pull together community partners to create some social safety net for kids who don't have anywhere else to go, who otherwise might remain unsupervised. And I believe the governor was saying that in some rural environments, and I'd love to hear from somebody in a rural environment who could speak more directly to this, to talk about, you know, why they're, it may be that those schools play a larger sort of community service that can't be replicated in other parts of the area.
That's what I was thinking, that, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring in another guest now. Denise Clark Pope is a senior lecturer at Stanford University School of Education. She's the co-founder of Challenge Success, which works with schools and families to develop strategies that provide kids with academic, social, and emotional skills needed to succeed. And Denise Clark Pope, welcome to the program. And what advice, what are you thinking about? What are you telling parents or others who ask you, like, what can we do? We suddenly have this complete change of routine. It's like summer vacation, except everything's closed and we're all at home and we're supposed to still have the kids learning. Like, what are some ways to bring order to what could easily become a very chaotic situation?
Well, I think it's going to be chaotic whatever we do, but I think we're going to have to take a step back and think through some of the bigger picture items. If you have to do work and you're students are also supposed to be doing work, this is a difficult time, right? So for everyone out there who doesn't have the capability to get online, doesn't have the capability to share devices, isn't sure where the food is going to come because they rely on schools for food, this is going to be something that the parent alone can't figure out. For many, many people, you've got parents who are able to work from home and get online and kids as well, but that doesn't mean that your kids are going to be doing that unsupervised, particularly if you have younger kids, but even older kids aren't going to just jump online and do their work without any kind of supervision. So my advice would be, first, take a step back, realize that this isn't going to be school as usual. This is not going to be 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., everyone's going to be learning all the time, and that's okay. And in the grand scheme, if you get some things done each day, if your kids have some kind of structure, and I can talk more about that, get some kind of exercise every day, that might be in the home, that might be outside the home, alone in a field, not congregating with other kids, but in the grand scheme, what we know to be protective factors for kids are playtime, downtime, and family time.
Well, and that raises another question, which is how do you talk to your kids about what's going on? Obviously, it depends on what age they are, but what are the ranges of things that you should and should not say?
Well, I think You're right. It depends on the age. And many people have given lots of advice online that you can turn to, certainly pediatricians and psychologists as well. One thing I think that everyone, it's okay to say, this is a really different kind of time. This is a little bit scary. It's okay to be scared. And we're here together as a family for a reason. The reason that the school is closed is to keep people safe. The reason that we're taking these precautions in our house and we're keeping everybody inside and you're not going to do a play date today is because it's our job to keep everyone safe. And we're going to try to set up a routine. I think what will make people feel a lot more calm, kids of all ages, is some kind of routine where you say, from this time to this time, here's what we're going to be doing. It might be family time. It might be exercise time. It might be reading for pleasure, and then we'll have a conversation about it. It might be doing some of the things that the schools have sent home are expecting. But I think recognizing the fear and saying it's okay to be scared and it's okay that this is, I'm scared too, but we are doing everything we need to be doing to keep you safe.
I've got some comments from listeners, and just let me give out the phone number again if you want to join our conversation. It's 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Alana tweets, I wish I had a plan. My goal is just to get my unmotivated middle schooler to do the minimum amount of homework that he's assigned. Thankfully, we already supplement math with an online program that will likely continue uninterrupted. And then another listener tweets, stress tends to impede academic retention while heightening emotional retention. I think the focus should be on mental and emotional health for children and parents, possibly with teletherapy. Academics can be made up later, even if that's 2 months from now. Jenny Rudesky, what do you have to say about that notion, this taking care of people, of kids emotionally and their mental health first? In some ways, you have to keep that on an even keel before you can even think about academics.
I agree with that completely. And I think that what I've been encouraging families to do is know that there's some degree of organization and structure to their day that it's important to keep, just so you don't feel like you're in this timeless, anxious space, that you feel a little bit more control over your lives, that you have time to just have fun and try to laugh together and connect with the people that you're worried about, whether it's grandparents or elderly neighbors or other folks that are more vulnerable right now. But a lot of what happens in school is really social and emotional learning. You're learning how to get along with other kids and handle getting through a class that frustrates you. If you're a little kid, you're learning how to do your writing assignment instead of grabbing the iPad, right? So there's so much social emotional learning that can happen at home. And I'm in my clinic, when I'm trying to coach families who are raising a child with self-regulation issues or autism, I'm often talking about games and play and getting outdoors and doing things that, games that involve you and your child having to take some turns, having to connect emotionally, having to kind of feed off of one another. And it might not be really, play in a classic sense. It could also be just reading books together, listening to audiobooks, reading some comic books together. All of these things are conversation starters with kids. Kids don't always want to sit down and talk about the virus and what their fears are. Sometimes they play that out through little kids kind of getting outside and pretending to like slay the dragon that's kind of been over their head for the past couple weeks. For other kids, they may want to draw. They may want to sit and talk with you about other stuff that's been stressing them out. And you may be like, what? You're not focusing on the virus? You're focusing on, some other social slight that happened at school, right? So it's encouraging time for that communication. And part of that means, as parents, we have to take it easy on ourselves with how much work we're expected to get done if we are teleworking, with how much we are checking that Johns Hopkins coronavirus map that has just, gives me an anxiety attack every time I see it, because you really want to know your own emotional reactions to all the news coming at us. And it's moving at such a fast pace. We don't have to be connected to it at every single moment. We can kind of check in. If you're a numbers person and you want to check the stats in your state, you can do that in the morning. You can check in with what's going on with your local news. But really take some time to get offline with your kids, and that'll be healing for everyone.
Exactly. Well, then I think that's good advice year-round, even when things are more normal, kind of unplug every now and then. Let's go to the phones now. We've got a teacher on the line, Allison in Orinda. Welcome.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, you know, I understand your experts' concerns about kids missing school. Really, we of course, school is a really important service for them. But it's also important to remember that teachers also have to think about their own protection. You know, we have teachers on staff in my school who are cancer survivors, who have other health issues. So it's really an ongoing situation of trying to figure out, should I be coming to work or not? You know, am I posing a risk to myself by exposing myself to kids and maybe bringing something home to people at home who might be vulnerable? So I think, you know, it's just like she was saying, that it's difficult if healthcare workers have small children and have to miss work to stay home and care for them. It's also difficult to run a school if teachers have to stay home to take care of their small children or to avoid getting sick.
Yeah, you know? We have to remember teachers are people too, and they have their own issues they're dealing with in their own lives, including having kids many times.
Right. And the other thing is that, and I don't think this is just true at my district, but even though we tell parents that we're taking precautions, the truth is we had a shortage at our school of all the things you need to keep a classroom clean, and we don't have enough staff to really do the kind of cleaning that you would need to do every day. So, I mean, tables don't get sprayed, cleaned every day. Hand sanitizer is not available widely.
Yeah.
You know, so
there's you can't eliminate every single risk, and you just, I guess we all have to do the best we can, right? Wash your hands
right.
as often as you can, and don't touch your face and all those things. And, you know, we just hope that that we'll get through this, as I'm sure we will. Allison, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. Marisa Lagos, I know you have two young kids, two boys. You and your husband both work. You're talking with us right now from, I don't know if you're still in the garage, but you're at home.
My new office.
So what's your strategy? What are you and David doing?
Well, I think a lot of what everyone's talked about is really true. I mean, I think to our best efforts, we're going to try. We, you know, put out a sort of proposed schedule for the day, and we're going to try to get a mix of some fresh air and exercise, obviously away from other families and people, but also try to, you know, build in some learning hours, some downtime, and just really be flexible. We're kind of, you know, trying to take different swing shifts so that we can focus on the kids when we're with them, because trying to work and help them is not really that reasonable. And I think that, you know, one of the things that's been so challenging, honestly, is how quickly this thing is moving and changing. As of Saturday, we were talking about trying to do some sort of co-op situation with folks on our block who we had already had exposure to. And then given all the health guidelines over the weekend, we decided that even that was sort of a step too far, that we should probably just self-isolate as much as possible. And so I think that, you know, we're trying to do FaceTime visits with grandparents and other friends. We're trying to build in time for ourselves to exercise and keep our mental health okay. But it is going to be a challenge, and I think we all have to be nice to ourselves.
Yes, we do. Marisa Lagos is KQED politics correspondent. She'll be with us for the rest of the hour, along with Julia McAvoy, our senior editor for Education and Equity, Jenny Radesky, and Denise Clark-Pope. And we do want to hear from you. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions to us. It's forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about the impact the school closures are having on families and children and the community in general, some resources for parents, and just the ways communities are coping with these extraordinary times. Our guest this hour, Marisa Lagos, is politics correspondent here at KQED. Julia McAvoy is senior editor for Education and Equity at KQED. Jenny Radesky, development pediatrician from the University of Michigan's C.S. Mott Children's Hospital. Denise Clark-Pope, senior lecturer at Stanford University School of Education. And joining us now is Art Reingold. He is a professor and head of the Division of Epidemiology at the University of California's Berkeley School of Public Health. Art Reingold, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to join.
What can you tell us this morning? I'm sure you're monitoring the latest health information very carefully. I don't know how much of our conversation you heard in the first half hour, but is there anything new or different that you're hearing this morning? Any updates from over the weekend?
Well, I don't know that I have anything terribly new that you haven't already covered. Clearly, we continue to have more and more cases being identified in a variety of places, you know, some pretty substantial clusters in places like Seattle and in New Jersey and New York, some here in the Bay Area. So I'm not sure there's any news there. We have some very disturbing cases in emergency room doctors and other healthcare providers. So the problem certainly continues to cause concern at all levels of the public health and healthcare.
Disturbing, are you referring to the fact that there are people, first responders, who are being infected, or what did you mean by that?
Yes, I mean, we obviously have some critically ill, healthcare providers who clearly have become infected through working with patients. And so that's just one more area where we clearly need, and I think are doing a better job of making sure to protect our healthcare workers.
All right, let's go to the phones now. And Ben in San Carlos, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. You know, as parents, we're always trying to come up with a contingency plan. So if one of the two parents or both of the parents get coronavirus, what do you do with your kids and who can take care of them? For most of us, it's the grandparents that would normally step in, but of course they're at risk. Do you have any recommendations of how we plan a backup plan in case the adults in the family get coronavirus?
That is a really scary question. Art Reingold, I know you're an epidemiologist, not necessarily a physician who's providing first-line care, but what are your thoughts about Ben's question?
Well, you're absolutely right. We certainly do not want elderly people or people with underlying conditions providing care to children who have the coronavirus. So, I don't know exactly what, under the governor's plan, communities or counties or other organizations will be able to provide. But you're asking a really important question because we certainly do not want to expose our elderly to kids with coronavirus infection, that's for sure.
Julia, I'm wondering if you're aware of any, I mean, we're still, you know, probably at the fairly early stages of this, the extent to which nonprofit organizations, whether it's the Red Cross or Boys and Girls Clubs or churches and synagogues and mosques, I mean, are stepping up to say we can provide childcare if in the worst case situation, something like what Ben described, the parents mm-hmm. are unable to do that. And I realize there are all kinds of issues related to an offer like that. But mm-hmm. what, if anything, are you hearing?
Well, I do not know about offers like that, but I wouldn't be surprised to see those things popping up, because I think what we're sensing across the spectrum here is sort of how we're responding to this as a society. And I think it's sort of reestablishing the social fabric of how we're reaching out to one another and trying to work with each other to get through this really difficult moment in time. And you see examples of this left, right, and center. You know, we have a GoFundMe that I think has been established by Berkeley High School students, where they're trying to raise funds for students who don't have computers and might need food or maybe even childcare help. We've got a music teacher who's going to deliver lessons online. We've got Google Docs being established to connect the needs of people with helpers. And I think the gentleman who called in just now with this amazing, you know, question, it really does test sort of our relationships and our larger sort of extended family and support systems. And I do believe that we are seeing a lot of people, again, with your caveat, Scott, of who can connect with whom and at what risk, given the how this thing spreads. But I do really believe we are seeing people step forward and offer to help each other out in many, many different ways right now that is very, very heartening.
Ben, thanks so much for the question. That's gotten all of our guests thinking about this contingency, and we appreciate your raising that. Thanks so much, and good luck. Let's go now to Elsie in San Rafael. Welcome, Elsie. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm in seventh grade, and as a student, I support the school closure because I know that schools are like a main way that, you know, sicknesses are transmitted. And I think that they do need to close the schools. And I understand how it can be hard on parents. There are online resources. And I know like my parents like set up a whiteboard in our living room and we're just crossing things off as the day goes. And I think that, you know, parents may be stressed out and the SFUSD stressed out, you know, everybody's stressed out, but yeah.
Do you have, how many siblings, how many siblings do you have?
I don't have any siblings.
Ah, so it's
only
just
a child.
Oh, okay. So in some ways that makes things easier. Are you keeping in touch with your friends in some way at the same time?
Yeah, I actually started like a little like online school club on Google Classroom where like me and my friends have been sharing schoolwork or like online schoolwork right now. And I think that that kind of helps. So we know like we work on what the same topics are and work on the same things together. But yeah, so yeah, well, I have been keeping in touch with my friends.
All right. Well, Elsie, thank you so much for checking in. Good luck to you. What's next on the board that you're going to be crossing off?
Well, I'm probably going to have to go do some jobs because I have some jobs on there too. So I'm going to have to go scoop the cat poop next.
Okay.
So that's going to be delightful.
All right. Well, don't forget to wash your hands afterwards. Okay. Elsie, thank you so much. Thanks for a little levity. That was nice. We've got some comments online. Jessica writes, how bad would it be if the kids just lost a few weeks of learning? Jenny Rodesky?
Well, I worry most about kids who have autism, learning disabilities, speech and language delays, right? Because they really rely on regular therapy to maintain their skills, and they do have documented regression without those therapies. However, I think that we can accept that some of the therapies are going to be a little less frequent. Some of them will have to turn virtual or through telehealth. And I think that if parents can just have that idea of we're just going to try to maintain some skills and maybe you're going to try and, you know, build some other skills like chipping in around the house. I mean, my husband and I have been talking about with our two boys, you know, how long is the actual, you know, mathematics and writing and other, you know, school tasks going to occur and how much are they going to kind of work on building other skills that might include, you know, working with their hands, doing more artwork or other sorts of things that, you know, we really want to pass on to them. I know that's a very hopeful way of spinning the fact that we're home, we have our kids home, but I want parents to see this somewhat as an opportunity to say, what do I want to teach my kids? You know, in such a stressful time, how do I want to model to them how I cope? And what sort of skills you can still do to feel like you have meaning and you're kind of creating good things in a time where everyone is collectively so stressed. I love that middle schooler just called in because I really like hearing children's voices during this time. They really have an interesting perspective. I'm so relieved as a pediatrician that this virus has not been severe in children so far. Mm-hmm. And that's been kind of reassuring to kids is that they're like, well, okay, how can I help out? All these adults are really stressed out. So, you know, what can I do for mom and dad? Or what can I do to make sure that my elderly neighbors or my grandparents are doing okay?
And kids really are generally, just going to say, kids are generally pretty resilient too, right? I mean, obviously you want to do whatever you can to mitigate the emotional harm, but, you know, kids can step up. You can ask them to help out too.
Hey, Scott.
And you can also.
Yeah, go ahead, Julia.
Oh, no, this is Denise.
Myself. Oh, Denise, sorry.
Sorry,
yeah, Denise Pope.
I just wanted to say that at Challenge Success, we've been talking about this for years, right? One of the things that we have been doing at Challenge Success is working with schools and families to help them think about the bigger picture, that it's not just about academics, particularly school-based academics, in the traditional way of sort of memorize and spit back, you know, on a test. So I see this, like Dr. Rodesky, as a real opportunity that parents can focus on skills, not content. And once you take that leap where you're not worried, are they going to memorize certain facts and figures for the test, but you're looking at, do they know how to collaborate? Do they know how to think through a problem? Do they know how to communicate with others? Those are all things that you can practice naturally during the day through things like chores, through things like talking to the grandparents on Skype, through things like having a Google FaceTime party with your friends. So is it okay to miss a couple weeks of school? For many, many kids, I would say it's a real opportunity to focus on some of the skills that the schools haven't been necessarily focusing on that you can take the time as a family to start doing.
Well, and in some ways, it's an opportunity to kind of rediscover the importance of personal connections with people, to put your phones down and talk to each other, have fun with each other, and, you know, sort of try to make lemonade out of these lemons we've been handed.
Absolutely.
And I think it's an opportunity.
Go ahead, Jenny.
Opportunity to use media in really positive ways.
Yeah.
Right? So I've worked with the American Academy of Pediatrics on our screen time guidelines, where we really have talked a lot about choosing really good content, using media to connect, to support your community, recognizing when you're just going down a rabbit hole of toxic content that's stressing you out. So this is also a crucial opportunity for families to work on that, make a plan of how you're going to use media and how much, you know, challenge kids to unplug themselves sometimes and exert their own tech self-control so that they're not just, you know, gaming all afternoon. And, you know, what other activities you need to build in offline that are going to help you with the emotional connection that you need to cope.
Here's a comment from Johnny, who writes, "Now's the time for children, indeed all of us, to practice other skills, thinking, patience, stillness, real meaning of social responsibility, cooperation, the science of being alive and how to take care of yourself and each other, how to be together without all the busyness." And Nola writes, earlier it was mentioned that there's an educational programming on KQED Plus. Can you please mention that online, Earl, again? I can indeed. It's kqed.org/TV. And you can also go to kqed.org/education for more information on home learning resources as well. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Benjamin in Berkeley, you're next.
Oh, hi. I take it I'm on the air right now?
You are.
Okay, yeah. I am an eighth grade science teacher in Oakland, and I have to say that the current curriculum I have right now, FOSS, Full Option Science System, developed right here in Berkeley, is great for distance learning, but I could not even imagine what I would be doing if I had the curriculum we were using last year that didn't have all of these online resources. And I think there's huge inequity among schools, depending on their curriculum and subject, for what they can actually do right now. And my school sent home every student who needed it a Chromebook. And apparently you can even access my program and all the slides on a cell phone, which, you know, only found out in the middle of this crisis. But it's turning out pretty well so far for most students, it seems like.
All right. Well, good luck, and let's hope that that continues. Thank you, Ben, for the call. Let's go now to Shane in San Luis Obispo, down on the Central Coast. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, and thanks for taking my call. Over this last weekend, about five families, we got together in our garage. We've set up a classroom, and we have about 10 kids among us to do school this week, and we're all gung-ho for it. We thought it'd be fine and safe, and then as news came out over the weekend, we started to pull back and wonder if with 10 adults, about eight of them going into work, as they would drop the kids off, you know, be able to do that. And the kids come and mix and mingle at our place and at the little makeshift school, and then go back home to the adults, and the adults are, of course, out at work. Wondering from an epidemiology standpoint, is that too much social interaction among the parents, and would this create too much of a opportunity for the virus to spread, or is that small enough that maybe not?
Yeah. Art Reingold, what do you think?
Well, of course, smaller is better, bigger is worse. That's an obvious statement. You know, I think the only advice I can give, because we still need to take care of our children and educate them during this process, is the standard metrics that you've heard in terms of assiduous attention to hand washing and the other things we know can reduce transmission from one person to another. So I think one has to pay particular attention to those issues, but one does still need to interact with one's children. And if you're going to have kids in even small groups, I think these issues do require close attention. But
kind of a balancing act. You gotta consider all the different things that you weigh them all. And Shane, is that helpful to you, or do you want to have a chance for a follow up with
Art
Reingold?
That's great. It's kind of like going to a roulette table. You don't know, you know, where there's this disease right at the roulette table, but how the value of the jackpot of having the kids interact and get education and the help it provides. But what, you know. It's a balancing act, right?
All right. Yep.
Scott, could I jump in?
Sure. Go ahead, Marisa.
Yeah, I mean, I am not an epidemiologist, obviously, but I think what, from all the research we've been doing and thinking we've been doing in our community, I think it really does also depend on where you are, right? What is the status in your city and county? And then, you know, to the point of what are the parents doing? How much exposure are they getting? The Washington Post has this excellent simulation that they put on their website kind of showing how community spread happens. And I think everyone obviously has to make their own decisions, but we're just really thinking hard about trying to take a break for a few days in the hopes that if everyone stays healthy, maybe we can, you know, reassess in a week or so.
All right. Shane, thanks very much for the call. Here's another comment. Art Reingold, sort of right along the lines of what we were talking about a moment ago, but he writes, what is your guidance on kids playing with friends only in homes or outside or not at all? Obviously, you want to, again, strike that balance, right?
Well, again, you know, I think there is some advice about this in terms of, you know, that outside is better than inside because there's less likelihood of transmission out in the fresh air and trying to maintain some spacing. But with little kids, obviously, it's difficult to get the balance between having them have some activities and interactions on the one hand and trying to keep them safe. So, yes, I would agree that outside is better than inside, and presumably smaller numbers of kids as opposed to larger numbers of kids.
And what about things like playgrounds?
Well, I think it's more, again, a question of how many kids, number one. It also obviously can be, at least we hope, helpful for good, perhaps better hand sanitizing than might normally occur while at and after being at a playground. And certainly if a child is coughing or sneezing, we don't want that child in the playground while they're sick.
All right, here's another comment from Tiffany, who writes, I'm a primary school teacher in San Francisco. We sent home journals, writing prompts, math packets, plus writing and art supplies and links to library and online resources. Although many people don't have computers, we know many kids have phones and can access many cool educational links and videos. I'm also writing my students letters every few days and asked them to take a walk and connect with nature. We're all hoping to use this time to clean the schools and give the virus a time to slow down. Jenny Radesky, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, that is a dedicated teacher, and I think this is one of those times where we remember, if we have forgotten, just how committed teachers are to taking care of our kids.
Oh, I've read some amazing emails from teachers this morning that have been forwarded to me from other pediatricians at my hospital of all the different ideas they've been compiling for kids that have to do with so many different aspects of either science curriculum or math curriculum that kids can access through everyday activities. So I just applaud the efforts that teachers are doing right now. And I want to go back to that question of, you know, where can kids see each other? What is safe? I touched base with the infection control and epi folks at my hospital this morning to see what's recommended. And to, you know, I'm taking a hard line, because the more, you know, every single one-to-one interaction you might have with someone else can lead to another possible infection, which can lead to three more, which can lead to three more, which can lead to three more, right? So we are already very much at capacity for most U.S. hospitals for what we can handle in critical care. And so every little bit really matters that parents can do. So if it is like absolutely crucial to be able to share some child care, that there really are no other workarounds, then I understand the limitations that families have. But if there are other things you can do that might not involve going to a playground where, you know, your kid who often puts their fingers in their mouth, you know, might, you know, be either spreading germs or getting more germs, if you can do something that involves looking out the window, taking a walk together, staring at the new buds on the trees, looking at the birds, something that really is taking you out of your usual routine and makes you be a little bit creative of how you spend your time and keep your kids occupied, the healthcare system would appreciate it tremendously. And it's not just about being altruistic. It is also about when the people you love or you might need a hospital admission, you would much rather be in a hospital system and a healthcare system that has the capacity to care for you.
Julia McAvoy, we are in, you know, day one of the really massive school closures. This could go on indefinitely. We just don't know how long it's going to go on. What are districts thinking about? What should teachers and families be thinking about, you know, as we consider consider the possibility of this going on for several weeks?
Yeah, as I've been listening to people talking about this immediate couple 2 weeks ahead of us and sort of talking about skills and using things for civic learning examples and, you know, science lessons about how the virus spreads and all these wonderful things, I'm mindful that, you know, most of the districts so far have cobbled together 2 and 3 weeks by moving up their spring breaks to attach it to this mandatory 2-week shutdown. But I think if you look at the countries that shut schools, China, Singapore, South Korea, Japan, Italy, they're closed for quite a bit longer than that. And I think we just don't know how long we are going to be closed. And that's where it circles back to districts trying to figure out how can we do online learning that's age appropriate for all of the kids at home in an equitable way. And I think that they are really trying to work that out. And I think part of it comes back to the upper levels of government, where you're asking questions like, we know the governor has told districts you're going to get funding for school days that are lost, but is the instructional time going to count for kids if they do a lesson plan over the next month or 2 months? Or are we going to lose 2 months worth of school time that we have to make up at some other time? And I think that's where we're going to get hopefully some more direction from the California Department of Education maybe this week, because they really haven't sorted that out yet. Meanwhile, some districts are really being very specific, and I love that people are calling out teachers, because I also have heard from lots of teachers who are saying, look, we can make this work, especially secondary school teachers. They say, look, the kids are already getting assignments online. They're already turning in assignments online. We can continue to make this work at the sort of middle and high school level. I think the other grades, it's going to be more challenging. We know we have food pickups going on at many, many districts across the Bay Area, and some schools are assembling, you know, paper and ink packets to send home with those food pickups. So you could imagine, you know, a month or 2 months where as you're getting your food, you're also getting a hard packet of learning to do at home. Again, assuming someone can supervise you and help you do that at home.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones and Arshad in Fremont. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you. My name is Arshad Rashid and I'm the president of Mission San Jose High School PT organization. Over the weekend, the PTO got together and we decided that it would be helpful to plan for long-time school closure. And we have identified parents and the previous students or former students who have come back from colleges who can be available to help the teachers in their lesson plans, in their onboarding them onto technology platforms, helping them organize to that level that teachers need help on an individual basis. So I believe that the PTOs and PTAs can work with the teachers and individual schools to bring technology resources for many of our teachers to help them get them onboarded onto distance learning. Even though the schools are currently closed only for 2 weeks, our assessment is that we need to be prepared for long duration of school closure.
That's a really interesting idea, Arshad. And what kind of response have you gotten? Have you reached out to those students, you know, who are home and out of college at the moment?
Right now, at this point, we don't want to get ahead of the teachers or the school administrators. We internally have planned activities and sign-up sheets to be ready if and when the teachers or the school administrators need that help. So we are following the lead from what has been. We will follow the lead, whatever the school needs to ask of us.
All right. Well, thanks very much. That's some very forward thinking there in Fremont. I appreciate your sharing that with us, Arshad. Denise Clark-Pope, that's the kind of sort of out-of-the-box thinking we're going to need in a crisis like this, aren't we? Let's take advantage of the resources that are available to us in the form of, you know, college kids who are now home.
Absolutely. I know I've got college kids at home right now. They have their own online learning that they're supposed to do. But again, I think if we think outside the box, even high school kids can take an active role in teaching others, in designing video lessons. Kids of all ages can get excited about certain projects that maybe follow their own passions and then work to help divvy those out to others. So I love the out-of-the-box thinking. Again, I just want to calm our listeners down that it's okay that they're not going to be spending all day long in classrooms or filling out worksheets that the schools are sending home. There's a lot of learning that can be done at home, online, independently. Go out and look up something that you've always wanted to look up if you're an older kid, how to make chocolate, you know, how to learn how to skateboard around your driveway. This is a time that you can think outside the box and do things that we know are educational but also enjoyable and calming.
And Julia McAvoy, you just texted me, let's expand it from college students to seniors in high school who are at home. Maybe they can help too.
Absolutely.
All right. Here's a comment from Anne that I'll give to you, Art Reingold. We've dealt with other serious epidemics. I don't remember a time when we did quarantining as we are now. Could the epidemiologist please explain why our response to COVID-19 must be different from our responses to SARS or MERS?
I'm not sure if you're talking about domestically or internationally. Domestically, we've never had a problem with MERS, and the SARS problem was largely confined to a number of other countries, so we didn't have much of a problem here. We didn't have dissemination of either virus in the United States the way we do with the COVID-19. So I think within the U.S., it's clear that we're responding to disseminated infection at this point in a way we didn't have to for those viruses. Globally, I think it's a somewhat more complicated question. We may not have time to get into it.
Yeah, indeed we don't, because we're at the end of the hour. But I want to thank all of our guests, Art Reingold from UC Berkeley School of Public Health, Denise Clark Pope from Stanford University School of Education, Jenny Radesky from the University of Michigan C.S. Mott Children's Hospital, and KQED's Marisa Lagos and Julia McAvoy. Thank you all so much for joining us. And stay safe out there, everybody. Thanks to our listeners as well for the great comments and questions, and we appreciate that very much. And let me give out the information again about KQED Plus. You can go to kqed.org/TV to watch online, and we'll have a lot of educational materials as well for kids who are home and parents trying to keep them busy, kqed.org/education. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening. Stay well.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.